I was very lucky when I came into this league. I was drafted 18th by the Chicago Bulls. My first coach was Phil Jackson. So when you get drafted, that's one day of your life. Playing in the NBA, you want that to be your career. So where you go is far more important than when you go.
Rick Bucher.
I just wonder when you look at, and are we allowed to mention who you have? Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so Josh Jackson from Kansas was the big fish that B.J. Armstrong landed for the Wasserman Media Group. We don't know exactly where he's going to go.
This is the B.J. Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring B.J. and Bucher.
Welcome to the 41st edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. We're going to be joined by a very special guest. We can now call him NBA champion, David West. And this, again, was one of those interviews that was so good that we normally reserve it for the fourth quarter. We're going to give it two quarters in this particular podcast. I think you're going to enjoy it. We got to talk about a lot of things. With David West, you're gonna see a side of him that maybe you hadn't previously seen. But we're gonna start with what we just experienced, BJ. Both of us were in the building for Game 5, the Golden State Warriors clinching their second championship in 3 years, doing it on their home court. The first time that's happened in the Bay Area with any sport, with any team, since the mid 70s. And I just wondered for you, what was it like? You've won championships. What's it like for you to be in the building to watch somebody else experience what you experienced?
First, before answering, I just want to say congratulations to the Golden State Warriors on a job well done. They started this season with a purpose. They ended it with their goal and accomplished it. And, you know, clearly they were the better team throughout the series, and I thought throughout the entire season. But you must give Cleveland a lot of credit. They came to play, but it was just too much Golden State Warriors in the end. In watching this, it just brings back so many memories because you know how difficult, how tough that is. And it's one thing to win when no one expects you to win, but it's another thing to win when everyone says you ought to win and playing with that pressure throughout the course of the season. And I remember what that felt like when we won our second championship. You know, clearly we were the favorites from the beginning of the season, and to carry that out and to maintain that focus, but more importantly, you know, to maintain that team aspect throughout an entire season through injuries and all of the things that can get in your way and trip you up. And I just give the Warriors organization credit because there were a lot of distractions throughout the year. There were a lot of things that came into the picture, with the biggest one being Kevin Durant, you know, getting him into the fold, making him feel comfortable, and finding the chemistry that's needed to win. So I just thought it was a phenomenal job by the entire organization. And you have to give the credit to the players, because the players, I thought they really made a conscious effort from top to bottom, starting with Curry and all the leaders of their team, to make sure that Kevin Durant felt comfortable. And more importantly, he was able to implement his skill set, what he brings night in and night out, and ultimately won the championship for him.
It was really unique in that you had guys that had won a championship together and had taken leadership roles. And then you have a guy like KD, who I think it's an oversimplification just to say, you know, people immediately, well, now it's KD's team. Now he took over. Now he's the finals MVP.
No.
I don't see it that way.
No, the one thing with the Warriors, and I touched on it a little bit with Coach Kerr, is that this team has a shared responsibility for leadership. The emotional leader, the physical toughness leader is Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. When it comes to making big shots and big plays and carrying the energy of the game, I mean, I think they look to Steph for that.
Sure.
Durant, I thought, played big in big moments. I thought they were able to exploit his matchup on the offensive end and put him in key situations so he can do what he do. And Clay was another piece who I thought he made a conscientious effort to focus in defensively, because that kid, Kyrie Irving, was putting on an offensive show. But they were tough baskets that he had to work so hard. And give him credit, when I say him, Kyrie. But I thought Clay made an effort to say, you know, made a conscientious effort to say, I'm going to defend this kid and I'm going to make it tough for him, and did a great job on the defensive end as well. I think what makes it unique is their best player is not the predominant leader, the alpha male on the team, if you will. You know, that's clearly Draymond Green. Draymond Green sets the tone for this team and how they focus. I think when he gets a little rattled, the team gets a little rattled. But when he's focused, he's locked in like he was all playoffs. I mean, he was locked in. I think it carries to the rest of the team. So I just think it's a very unique team where your best players are more reserved, more kind of laid back. And Draymond Green's skill set and his leadership really comes into play, and it works for them.
I've been around a lot of NBA Finals teams, and because of my role covering the league, I've often had a chance to, you know, to be with the teams and players as they celebrate afterward. And it's always been a somewhat of a melancholic experience for me to be that close to people who have achieved something that they've worked so hard collectively for. And like, I'm not a part of that. Like, I didn't do, even if I was the sideline reporter or beat brother, like, I have nothing to do with them winning the championship. I always find it funny when, you know, like broadcasters or people that kind of work for the team, covering the team, wear rings and like, we won a championship. And I'm like, you didn't do anything. You just covered the event, right?
Right.
And so my job is to understand what they feel like and what they went through as intimately as I can, but it's not nothing that I did. And I maybe because you have won a championship, like, you know what that feels like. You've had that complete satisfaction of getting to the top of the mountain. It doesn't hit you the same way.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of, you know, I remember the very first championship. You know, there's a lot of insecurities that go into winning a championship, if you will. And the insecurity is you're actually, it's a selfless act. You actually, you know, surrender to the whole. You surrender to the team. And that's kind of counterintuitive to your natural instincts. You know, your natural instincts is to make sure that you're fine first and then worry about the other things. But when you're on a team and you begin to experience that, there's a trust, there's a selflessness, and you begin to, you know, really, you become aware of all of the people around you and your part into this bigger picture. So I think the insecurities that you have as a person, you really challenge yourself to, well, what will happen if it doesn't work? And I remember when, you know, my big moment as a player, and I think I've shared this with you over the years, is when we lost Game 7 to the Pistons the year before us winning the championship. Because that was the first time I ever was beaten, and I had to realize that that team was just better than us. And I had to do something about it. Either I was going to give up or I was going to challenge myself to be better than I ever thought I could be if I was going to challenge and beat this Detroit Pistons team. And we looked at all of us. I mean, we had a great player in Michael Jordan. He wasn't Michael Jordan at that time. You know, Scottie Pippen wasn't Scottie Pippen at that time. And the Detroit Pistons were clearly the better team. I mean, they beat us year after year after year. And once you dig in and you go internally, you find out a lot about yourself. And as you know, Rick, you know, you ever see people win, like, on television? I love them. People win, they're so shocked. They're like, I won? Wait a minute, that can't be. It's like, it never happens to me, right? It's always someone else.
Right.
So that's kind of the feeling, like, we actually did it. You actually set out to, I mean, Kevin Durant to me was, I just found myself watching him and watching the players who hadn't won because they couldn't believe it. It was like Kevin Durant couldn't believe it.
Oh, David West.
David West.
Speaking of, like,
he punched me so hard. David West punched me so hard. Like, I'm bruised right now. And he was so fired up. And watching JaVale McGee and watching all of the guys who hadn't won, it was just, it's really refreshing because you see this, like, they're so excited because it never happens. It never happens to me kind of moment.
We did this interview with David that's on this podcast before. We did it midway through the series. And I spoke to him after they won the championship. And he was hyperventilating.
Yeah.
And he was like the angry old man that just never said much, but just went out and did his job. And then having won, he became this kid gulping for air, in just as you said, in disbelief.
The sense of urgency that David played with, West played with during that game was like, God, that's a pro's pro. You know, and I recognized him immediately. I mean, he was ready for the game. He met the emotion of the game. He met the physicality of the game. And he was at a place where he wasn't going to be denied. He was like, I'm here. I've been waiting and trying to get here my entire career. And he rose to the moment. And he rose to the occasion. And he stepped up big for them. So,
yeah,
those are the type of things that you work your entire career to get yourself in that one place or that one chance. And, you know, sometimes you only have one chance. Sometimes you never get a chance. But, you know, David is a pro's pro. Anyone has had an opportunity to play with him and meet him. He's so professional. And I was really happy for him because he was literally, I mean, when the guy hit me, I was like, oh, God, how about passed out?
All right. Enough of these NBA finals. That's the first quarter. Let's go to the second quarter. And I want to get into all of the conversation about how this Golden State Warriors team looks to be a dynasty, unbeatable. It's taking out all of the suspense when it comes to the NBA over the next couple of years. Who's going to challenge them or the Cavs? We're going to see this over and over again, so what's the point? And I thoroughly reject all of that, BJ. There are so many things that happen when it comes to health, when it comes to people's willing to continue to sacrifice. You know, I think it was Chuck Daly talks about, or it was Pat Riley, the disease of me. While I don't, you know, I think that the Warriors have the ability to, they have the kind of guys that can avoid that. It can come from any direction. I can't help but feel that the last time around, ownership tried to present the idea that the Warriors were smarter than everybody else and that poisoned the waters a little bit. Like, I think it can come from any avenue and it can upset the apple cart. And the idea that this team is a juggernaut and that nobody's going to be able to challenge them, you know better than anybody. Like, just the challenge of repeating, never mind like looking 2-3 years down the road, the challenge of coming back and going to a fourth consecutive NBA Finals and winning 3 in 4 years is a monumental task, both physically and mentally, that I'm not going to assume that the Warriors are capable of doing just yet.
Well, I think it's fair to say to what you said, you know, because teams normally, you know, you'll have younger players, older players, but you have this team where they're basically all in their 20s.
The key players, yes.
They're all in their 20s, the core players.
But you win a championship. I mean, we just talked about David West, you know, Zaza Pachulia, JaVale McGee.
Right.
Like, you have veteran players that have played, I don't know. I mean, maybe you get to the finals, maybe you compete, but you take all those guys out of the equation. Are they a champion? I just feel like everybody gets tested. Every part of your team gets tested. And their depth and their toughness that they added from last year was one of the things that put them over the top.
Well, you know, I think you make a good point. But I will say this. As I was watching the game last night, as I was watching this team, that team won 73 games last year without Kevin Durant.
Right.
Without David West. Without JaVale McGee's contribution. And then you add
but they also didn't win a championship after those 73 wins, and they had a team that won 73 and won a championship the previous year.
The fine line between winning is very, very thin. So I think when you look at it, this team could very easily have won 3 championships in a row as well. They were right there. But in saying all of that, I think this team is poised to make a run, Rick. I really do, because I think they have a team that their superstars don't have to carry the burden of a regular season.
Yeah.
Like a LeBron James or a Kawhi Leonard or a Kyrie.
Or Derrick Rose in Chicago.
They don't have to carry the team. I mean,
Or Russ Westbrook.
Yeah, your third or fourth option right now is Klay Thompson.
Right.
The guy gets 30 and we're going, okay, we're glad.
He can get 60.
Exactly. That's
what
I'm saying.
How many third scoring options can get you 60 in a given night?
Yeah, I just think this team has something figured out right now, Rick. I really do.
So let me ask you this, because Andre Iguodala is the one guy in talking to people last night that the first thing that was brought up was, you know, would he be satisfied with the money that he would be offered to stay. That they're not like, I think somebody said like 3 years, 30 million, whatever it is. Like if for whatever reason they can't financially keep Iguodala in the fold, or they can't keep Livingston in the fold because those guys decide, hey, I got a chance to take one more bite. I've got two rings. Like that, like they're sated that as far as that's concerned. You take those two guys out of the equation, how much does that affect this team?
I think it would affect the team, but I think both of those guys are at a different place in their career.
So you're not expecting them to go for the money if the money's there?
I'm not expecting Sean Livingston understands that his career could have been over. This is an opportunity that Sean Livingston, I mean, I remember watching that kid play in high school in Peoria, Illinois. Sean Livingston was, and still is to this day, I mean, he's a stud. Livingston was a phenomenal athletic player as a young kid. And when you see someone come back from that type of injury, you know, you have a different outlook. To watch how he's changed his game to where basically now he is a post-up player who, you know, post up smaller guards, has a mid-range game to be effective. That wasn't Deshaun Livingston that I saw and all of us saw as a young kid. I mean, he was very athletic, had a super handle, and can do all the things that an athletic player could do at 6'7". I just think they're at a different place in their life. I think Andre Iguodala is, you know, this kid has been an all-star. He's clearly a starter in this league and is valued as one. He understood what he needed to do to help this team win. I don't think he's made a sacrifice. He's just doing what he needs to do at this point. I mean, he's just being like a pro. I mean, he is a professional at all levels of the game. Where, you know, he could have easily stayed in Denver or gone somewhere and taken money years ago, but he saw the vision. I mean, think about it. Here is a two guard who came to play behind Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that's an accident. I think he's a thoughtful individual.
Yeah, I mean, technically he came in, he played three, and Harrison came off the bench when he first came here, but then he accepted going to the bench.
Because it just wasn't the right thing for them to win. I mean, think about it. He clearly is a starter in this league, okay? Make no doubt about it. But he did what he needed to do for the team to win. Again, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, you know, you have to face your own insecurities. Is starting more important than winning? Yeah. How many players will actually answer that question truthfully? And Andre did.
I can think of one who did and has. And that's our guest in this podcast, David West, who told me that he recognized that when he was playing against the Detroit Pistons, the same team that you guys had to climb the mountain against. And he said, I watched them and I was on the floor. He goes, I literally remember, I'm not going to get this done. I was the number two in New Orleans. I was the number two in Indiana. He said, for me to win a championship, I was going to have to go someplace where I was going to have to play a different role. Because I came to reality that winning a championship, which is what that's all he was about, it wasn't going to happen with him as a number two. That is part of the conversation that he had.
Can we please, from this moment, refer to him as Mr. West? Let's put some respect on that man's name. Because that is a very high conscious level to even aware of that. Okay.
No.
And give Mr. West credit. And I think our listeners will thoroughly enjoy this interview, and let's get right into it.
You got it. All right. So it's halftime. Enjoy the halftime entertainment courtesy of our producer, Shane Freeman. And then you will be joined by Mr. David West. Enjoy.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, today's halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast is brought to you by Mobb Deep, and this is their song, Shook Ones. This is out of respect to Mobb Deep's prodigy who just passed away at 42 years old. You know, hope you guys enjoy this. This is a hip-hop classic. Again, Mobb Deep and Shook Ones. Enjoy.
Just watch my back. I got your foot. Check it out now. Off the realness, we be the infamous, you heard of us, official Queensbridge. The mob comes equipped for warfare, beware of my crime family who got nothing.
with your nose bone. You all alone in these streets, cousin. Every man for himself in his land. We be and keep them show crews running like they supposed to. They come around, but they never come close to. I can see it inside your face. You're in the wrong place. Cowards like you just get their whole body laced up. Sucks. Speak the wrong words, man, and you will get touched. You can put your whole army against my team, and I guarantee you it'll be your very last time. Your simple words just don't move me. You're minor, we major. You're all up in the game and don't deserve to be a player. Don't make me have to call your name out. Your crew is featherweight. My to make you levitate. I'm only 19, but my mind is older. When the things get for real, my warm heart turns cold. Enough. Another story is told, it ain't nothing really. And yo, done sparked the Philly. So I could get my mind off these yellow back. While they still alive, I don't know, go figure. Meanwhile, back in Queens, the realness and foundation. If I die, I couldn't choose a better location. When the feel a burning sensation, getting closer to God. In a tight situation now, take these words home and think it through. Or the next rhyme I write might be about you. Son, it's shook. This ain't no such thing as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook. This ain't no such thing as halfway crooks.
Scared to death and scared to look.
Living the life that a diamond's in. There's numerous ways you can choose to earn funds. Some get locked down and turned nuns. Cowardly hearts and straight up shook ones.
Shook ones. He ain't a crook, son. He just a shook one.
For every rhyme I write, it's 25 to life. There was so much trust, safeguard of my life. Ain't no time for hesitation. That only leads to incarceration. You don't know me, there's no relation. Queensbridge, MC, don't play. I don't got time for your petty thinking, my son. I'm bigger than those. Claiming that you pack heat, but you're scared to hold. And when the smoke clears, you be left with one of your 13 years in the projects. My mentality is what, kid?
It's now time for our special guest. One two-time All-Star, 14 years in the league, power forward for the Golden State Warriors, David West. David, thank you so much for taking the time. Appreciate having you. And I have to say that just as I was kind of looking up your career history, and it dawned on me, you've been 14 years in the league and you've never been traded. What is that? Does that mean anything to you? Do you take any pride in the fact that whoever had you kept you until your contract was over?
I never thought about that. So I guess that's pretty neat. I just try to be consistent. That's one of the things that I learned at a very young age. It's just to be consistent. You know, once you kind of figure out who you are and what you are, you be that and you become, you know, your best in that. And so I've always just tried to present who I am on a consistent basis wherever I've been. Never really got caught up in, you know, trying to be anything other than what I am.
Understood. I one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because we talked about a little bit in doing a piece about your last couple of years playing for San Antonio and now playing for Golden State. And I wonder, when it comes to the secret sauce of the success of those two organizations, can you compare them? What works for San Antonio? What's made San Antonio special, and what makes Golden State special? And if there are any, what the similarities are and what the differences are?
I think in San Antonio, for instance, I competed against them in the Southwest Division.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing, you know, just having that experience of going up against them on a consistent basis throughout the NBA years, sort of getting inside there, you realize, I mean, it's a combination of Pop and his ability to, you know, just keep everything together, organized, have a clear-cut system. And then it's the guys that they have in there who've just been able to implement and play to, you know, his idea of what they should look like. They've adjusted throughout the years, but what makes them go is just it's the system. And you know, that's probably, I remember saying this when I got there, that was probably the, in terms of just getting the most out of my time, I'd never experienced such, you know, precision in terms of like practice and drills and, you know, specific points that you're trying, you know, depending on who we're playing, just how to get those points across. Yeah. It's just a constant teaching environment, but the precision and absolutely no wasted time on the floor. So that I think is a part of, you know, it's a real part of their success. And it has been for a long time. And obviously they've had great players in there like Tim Duncan and Ginobili, Parker, those guys. So they've been able to have that success throughout, you know, with those guys and then filling in roles throughout the years. And now sort of bringing in a new, you know, a new guy in terms of Kawhi and just sort of handing the things over to him and knowing he's going to be in charge of that system for a while. And again, they're just one of those top notch just groups of people. I mean, the collective people that they have in the organization are really, really high level people. So, you know, I think that's what attributes to their success. And then over here, it's a little bit of the same, just in terms of Steve being able to, you know, get the culture and the atmosphere, the environment to suit the guys that he has and make them mold and the environment, you know, is conducive for them to be the best that they can and thrive. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, for the last few years, everyone's sort of been looking at this at Golden State and the way they do things, because the NBA is such a long grind. One of the things that they've done here is you want to come in. You know, the environment is such that guys want to come to the gym, want to come and be, you know, and be a part of what's going on in the organization because of the culture and the kind of people that they have around throughout the organization. But then also the style of play. I mean, Steve does a tremendous job of just, like I said, with all the freedom and all the different talents he has, still a level of, you know, context and control that he sort of frames this whole thing in. And it works to maximize the abilities of the guys he has.
So, but you have been, I think it's fair to say, you've been known as a physical, tough-nosed player
right.
your entire career. I wonder, when I hear guys talk about players who are dirty and the physicality of the game today, and I've been covering this for a while, I can't help but kind of smile or laugh at times because, you know, when you were starting your career, the physicality was of a different nature. I mean, there were times where
right.
guys didn't go, you know, you went around the basket, you went off on 2 feet because you go off on one foot and you weren't going to be able to finish the shot. So when you hear Pop talking about Zaza or just the general conversation about the physicality of the game today, what do you think?
Well, I think that the game has definitely changed, and the way the game is called has shifted. But I think it's a bigger issue. Maybe not be a bigger issue, but it's a bigger sort of, it's a larger picture than what I think a lot of people see. You see, I think that part of the physicality and the and maybe referees calling the game a little bit tighter or whatever to free the game up is because there's so much invested now in the sports science.
Mm-hmm.
And so guys, it's not one thing to just say it. It's a literal thing. The players are bigger and stronger and faster now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just too, and the types of athletes that we have, you know, it's different. And so you can, a lot of times, some guys, and I hate to even say this, but some guys who were just known for being, you know, hard foulers and tough guys may not be skilled enough to get even be a part of this NBA now.
So
where you know what I mean? Where you can get on the floor and foul a guy because you got 7 foot small forwards, right?
Right.
So that part has changed. But in terms of, the game is nowhere near as physical as it was. That is obvious. And so when people maybe complain about guys being dirty, I don't think we have dirty guys in the league. I think we got guys that, you know, the older guys are you know, have an experience of what the NBA was, say, before like 2006, 2007, when a lot of the rules really began to change. And we came in at the end of a lot of those guys' career, when they had maybe a couple years left or whatever, and we experienced sort of that level, that caliber, and what they were. So, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily complain about the guys and the impact of the physicality. The one thing we do have to make sure people understand is that, you know, players are different now, and that there's a level of sports science that goes into this now that it's even beyond where I was in when I first came in the league, and it's grown in the last really 4 to 6 years. It's just exploded in terms of the science used to get guys in the best possible condition, in the best shape. And I think that the NBA knows that, and it's been a part of just that whole, we got to loosen up the game. We can't allow, because guys will seriously get hurt now.
There'll
be some of the collisions that used to happen when you got, you know, maybe guys were 205 and 210. Those collisions now happen against guys who are 245, 255, 260 pounds.
Yeah, and they're going as fast or faster.
Exactly.
Right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I think that's a fair point. Speaking of the change with players today and yesterday, when the whole Colin Kaepernick thing came up, made news. It was discovered, or the first time that I could remember it being revealed, that you and your way had been sort of staging your own quiet protest all along the way. And I'm wondering what inspired you to do it when you did it, and to do it the way that you did it?
I always felt like, if you really examine history the right way, protests haven't necessarily been effective. I think they're more symbolic than actual tangible change. So I always felt like if you felt convicted about, you know, protests or anything like that, then that's a personal thing, personal decision.
Right.
Because I just feel like, based on what history tells us, there's not really a whole lot of effectiveness from these, you know, protests or whatever. But when it came to me, it was at a time, I think this was like 2002, it was very early in my career, 2003 or 4, it was very early in my career. And our owner at the time was talking about, you know, it was mandatory that we stand, and obviously stand, but salute the flag and these different things. And I just felt like that was a bit much in terms of what he was asking us to do, because at the time there was like the Iraq war, there were a few other things going on that I just wasn't in agreement with. And so I just decided in my own way that I would always, then there were a couple other incidences, just being in New Orleans and things that just were very disheartening to me. This is pre-Katrina.
Right.
And I just felt like, at that moment, when we were going to be out there for the anthem or whatever, that I was just going to take a slight step back, and just then that would be symbolic for me, to just remember that there's a bigger world out here than this.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was warned against or cautioned against by the veterans that I had, it was to make sure that I didn't forget, that I didn't allow this lifestyle to sort of consume me and this be all that I can offer. And so a lot of it was just me standing there saying, I've always stood at the end, and it's always been just, yeah, you've got this life and you've got this opportunity, but there's a greater purpose, and there's stuff outside of this, because I think that's one of the hardest things for guys to deal with, is keeping themselves in tune and in touch with what is going on in the world. And you get consumed and caught up in this lifestyle thinking that this is real life, and it's not.
Yeah.
And so that was always a reminder for me personally. That's why I made it a personal thing and not a public thing, because it was always a reminder that there was others in the world who were not as fortunate, and that you always needed to, because regardless of what was going to happen in that game, right, the game was going to go bad, and I played the worst game of my life, it's not that bad, David, because there's other folks in the world who are doing a lot more serious things with a lot greater purpose than what you are out here, you know, dribbling the basketball, shooting the basketball, whatever. So that was always, it's always just been a personal thing for me, you know what I'm saying? To sort of, to remind myself, particularly at that moment, of what you know, what actually is. Because that's usually a moment where guys are, you know, guys pray, guys whatever they do.
Right.
And I just took it, you know, for something new to always just be a reminder for me and keep me grounded, sort of put my mind in the right space going forward into that game.
So we've gone on much longer than I anticipated, but I've really appreciated and enjoyed the conversation. I'll let you go on this. Winning a ring, mm-hmm. how would that impact your decisions on how much longer you want to play?
I think it's, you know, I'll have to cross that road, I guess, when I get there. Ultimately, you know, we want to finish the job.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's really the point of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a lot of work to do yet and still. And so for me, it's just about, you know, getting there and,
right.
and sort of crossing that line. And then once I cross that line, you know, I feel good physically, mentally, I'm in a good space. It would just really depend on, you know, if I wanted to do it.
Right.
But ultimately, it's gonna be sort of where I feel after and what I feel after, you know, we get the job done.
Right. Well, and I guess that's let me open it up because I just wonder what, you know, ring or no ring, put all that what you're doing aside, like,
right.
And I know you have plans and ideas for what you want to do after you play, because kind of discussed that about your friend Sheldon Muldrow, who's Dr. Muldrow, who's
right.
just starting his life and his career at 36, right. 37, as a podiatrist back in New York. And
right.
I just wonder, so like when you think about the arc of your playing career and the things that you want to go on to, is it, hey, as long as I feel good and I can play, I want to play, I'm going to ride this, that it's not necessarily a ring or achievement, but it's, or aside from just playing as long as you can, it's, you know what, I want to go on and do some other things, and the timing of that may call for me to move on before I'm actually physically incapable of playing still.
Yeah, that's constantly there. I just really going to come to, it's just really going to come down again to how I feel, because if, again, I don't think I want to be forced away from the game, meaning like knees are done, you know, back is done, can't move or whatever. I don't want to be in that position. You know, it's really just going to be on about my desire, you know, and you know, just what I feel like I've got left to contribute more than, you know, and even in terms of just basketball, just continuing to be, you know, a presence for guys, and, you know, being you know, someone that they can throw things off of, particularly younger players. So I really honestly don't know. You know, I've these last couple seasons have been great because I almost feel like a rookie in terms of just the things that I'm learning and going into these high level environments. And so kind of, you know, being here has given me a little bit more spark and juice, and then ultimately getting to the finals, I feel great. So it's just going to, like I said, it's going to be, you know, where I am and sort of what I want to do moving forward. But I've enjoyed the ride tremendously.
Well, David, I've always admired and respected your game and the way you've carried yourself in the locker room, talking to people around the league about you has always has only fortified that. It's why I was looking forward to having this conversation and wanted to have it. Again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it, man.
You got it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mr. West. Keep in mind, if you are listening to this on iTunes, subscribe, please send us a review. It's important to us. It's important to our sponsors that people are reacting and telling us what they like or don't like about the podcast. It means a lot to us. Just one word, two words, like it, don't like it. That's enough. And as always, you can find all of our podcasts on bjandbuecher.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter at bjandbuecher. Thanks for listening. BJ, thanks a lot for talking with me. And we'll do it again next week.
Thank you.